5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. Grace Parr is with me this week.
Grace Parr is with everybody this week.
What?
I don't know what that means.
Kieran Deal's here too.
Hi, how are you guys?
This week, Kieran Deal and Grace Parr join me to talk surfing the still-breaking blue wave of the 2018 midterms. We also debate public marriage proposals and talk about the one time I was in a kiss cam in a baseball stadium with my brother. Then, I'll have what she's having and the hills will die on. Oh my gosh. I am congested.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is congested because the state is on fire.
Yeah. Mother Nature is suggesting that we secede from the union.
Yeah. And I think,
top to bottom, burning it down.
I thought you said Mother Nature was suggesting that we leave this planet.
I feel like that's maybe the stronger pitch for why the fires. Why? Well, we should not be here.
Yeah, it's time, guys. Your reign is over,
hashtag
and I'm done with
time's
you
up.
As a parasite on my planet.
It's like when you go to a party and like, or you host a party and like somebody just won't leave. And you just want them to leave. And,
oh, yeah.
So Mother Nature's at the point where she's like, I'm going to start my house on fire.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time for you to go.
I'm burning my own self.
Yes.
That would be like if somebody comes to your party and then you set your house and yourself on fire so that you get them to leave.
That's really, they really want us gone.
I think whatever it takes, honestly.
I mean, when I watch a movie that's about like man versus nature, like Planet of the Apes or anything like that, I'm always like, come on, apes.
Oh, me too. I just saw War of the Planet of the Apes, by the way, for the first time.
That's a slow-ass film.
It was a slow-ass film. It was a slow-ass film. And I cared very much about the apes.
Welcome to Crooked Media, where you're getting all the hard-hitting news
brand
about what's
new
really important.
3-year-old movies and green tea.
We have some housekeeping. So we called for listener submissions to Hills Giving, our special listener heavy episode that we're doing for Thanksgiving, but also so that we can take a week off and see our families and let them know we're alive, because we've been in the Crooked Media studios imprisoned for 3 months straight. But it turns out we are far from the only people with extremely ardent opinions about extremely non-important things. We got so many submissions for Hills Giving that we will probably make the listener Hills to die on a regular part of the show. But next week, you'll be able to tune in and listen to a selection of reader Hills to die on, and also a mailbag episode from things that people have sent us over the months that we've been doing this podcast for you. So thank you so much for sending these. If you want to get in touch for other reasons or send a Hill to die on that we might feature at some other holiday episode or an episode where we're like, fuck it, we're not working this week. It's hysteria@crooked.com. And thank you for sending everything. Let's get into the news.
Let's do it.
So it turns out, every time I like look at a headline about what happened on November 6th, I almost feel like going, well, well, well.
Fiddle-dee-dee.
I mean, the night of the election, Kieran doesn't know what to
do. Kieran is shaking her head in disapproval of fiddle-dee-dee over here.
Fiddle-dee-dee. how the tables have stayed exactly how we thought that they would stay, but nobody listened to us. It turns out Tuesday, November 6th election was even better news for Democratic women than we initially thought, than pundits initially talked about. And that's great. Kyrsten Sinema won the Senate race in Arizona, taking famously spineless Republican Senator Jeff Flake's old seat and defeating Martha McSally.
Senator Jeff Flake of elevator fame.
Oh, yeah. You're the guy that's from right. the elevator. Yeah, yeah. I think that's maybe the best way for him to like live out his karma for the rest of his life is to have every if you see him in public, like, are you the guy from the elevator?
That's me. Just lean into it.
Are you the senator from the elevator?
The senator from the elevator. Did you? He's also from a town called Snowflake, which is hilarious.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Wait, there's a town called Snowflake?
In Arizona.
Oh, that's amazing.
And that's the town that Jeff Flake is from.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, a lot of flakes. A lot of flakes.
A lot of flaking. In a way, aren't we all from the town called Snowflake? All right.
I mean, that's where all liberals are from.
For sure.
Right?
I'm guilty.
Did you guys see the video of, so like kind of in the aftermath of the election, there's been a sort of male fit throwing, a Republican like collective tantrum about voter fraud and election interference. But it was sort of a different story in Arizona where Martha McSally, who was, had been kind of campaigning as a Trump acolyte,
yeah.
conceded in a way that was both classy and involved a dog.
I mean, there's nothing greater than that, I think. Anytime you can involve a dog, you're going to get points in my book.
Yeah, totally.
Good for her.
Yeah, she just kind of released a video that was like, good job. Congratulations. Carry on with democracy, which was great. But meanwhile, in places like Georgia, cartoon villain Brian Kemp is still is trying to, I guess, stop votes from being counted. We're still kind of in the process of figuring out how that's going to all unfold.
That's what democracy is about, for sure.
Yeah, also in Florida.
Still going. Yeah, still going with Mr. Nelson.
Yeah.
Which is very, you know, it's a little, every time you're just like, oh, God, why can't my state count?
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, always Broward County, too.
Broward and West Palm. They're big and they're, I don't know. There's obviously some infrastructural issues.
Yeah.
And I don't know why there's infrastructural issues because I haven't looked into it. But it's
what's the Broward County vibe? Like, has anybody been? Have either of you guys been?
I'm sure Karen's been.
Yes, of course I've been to Broward. Okay. What's the Broward County vibe?
Yeah, I wanna know like what's the vibe there? What's the vibe? Like we talk about like the numbers, but we don't talk about, you know, like you're driving down a street in Broward County. Am I rolling up to a Chick-fil-A and what am I going to an Olive Garden?
Chick-fil-A, I don't think. I don't think there's any Chick-fil-A's in South Florida. No, I'm sure if I'm incorrect about that, somebody will slam me on the internet.
I saw somebody describe as the Florida of Florida.
That's good.
I do have to defend South Florida and say that it is actually incredibly liberal. I did not, like, I grew up in Boca Raton, Florida.
Rat mouth.
That's correct. The mouth of the rat, which feels appropriate. And then entered the...
What?
Grace is just like aimless Spanish over there. Yeah.
It's a really fun word. Raton. It's so fun.
Oh, great.
Just try it with me, ladies.
Raton.
Yeah, it's great, right?
Okay.
Yeah. All right, let's move on.
I mean, I do, you know, I think it's fun to shit on South Florida because people in South Florida, I think, are used to having things being shat on for them. And, mm-hmm. and they're right. It is a very liberal place and it's very diverse and there's a lot going on there.
It's very diverse. Like, there's a lot of, I mean, like, I'll say that, okay, there weren't that many minorities, like, at the public school that I went to. But I did not realize, like, I was always treated like, oh, she's really smart and never, like, I didn't realize like I was like a woman in a minority really until I got into maybe like Harvard and then entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like it's like I was way more aware of like my identity like by like race and gender outside of South Florida than I was when which is yeah. counterintuitive. And that says a lot for a place. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And obviously that's a very particular experience and it's just one person's experience. I can't speak for everyone. Marilyn Manson was also from Boca Raton, Florida. The alcoholic Backstreet Boy, also from Boca
Wait,
Raton,
which
Florida.
Which one's the alcoholic?
AJ.
Nick Carter?
AJ.
Oh.
Again, the really hard-hitting issues today, guys. Really
AJ
knocking it
favorite.
Out of the park.
By the way, AJ had the best voice, for sure.
With 3-year-old movie references, Raton, and...
A little BSB.
And a
who
little...
are ending their residency in Vegas in April of 2019.
Oh,
so
my
check
God.
Check that out if you haven't.
This is clearly a post-election giddiness show. But I wanted to go back real quick to a couple like victories that we weren't able to fully gloat upon
yes,
in the
yes.
last episode. Katie Hill, who is only 31 years old, who people, like, I think she kind of doesn't really get mentioned in the mix with, like, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Abby Finkenauer of Iowa, who are both under 30. But Katie Hill's only 31.
Yeah,
and
dude.
She unseated Republican Steve Knight in California's 25th. It was one of the most expensive congressional races in the country, and she won.
And did she doesn't take money, right? She doesn't take money from super PACs?
Not super PACs, not corporate money, no. She's akin to Beto like that. And a number of other awesome progressives. Did you see the debate with her and Steve Knight?
No.
I don't know if you guys saw this. It's wild because he doesn't look at her. He doesn't acknowledge her. Like he's, I don't know, so intimidated or so holier than thou, whatever it was. It's the strangest thing to see two people theoretically in conversation, or at least in a debate of some kind, who just don't interact with each other. And she's like looking at him, not for approval, but just like because you're
talking to someone.
I feel like if we did this podcast and I didn't look at you guys. It was very strange.
Let's try it. Yeah. Let's see how the rest of this goes.
I mean, Megan does have her no eye contact rule, which has made it weird, but we do work around it.
It's in her writer. she's awesome, though. I will say I got a chance to host a town hall for Katie and did some canvassing for her in the district. And she is just so smart and ready to do this. And I think also what she has to say about mental health is incredible. And I think that her perspective on the Second Amendment is really interesting, too, especially as a progressive.
Yeah, she's also a member of the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And she's the first female member of that community elected to Congress in the state of California, which seems a little sad-gressive, as Z-Way would say.
Yeah.
But hey, we did it. Here we are with Katie Hill.
Mm-hmm.
In Congress. Actually, we tried to get somebody booked this week because we're like, we need to get somebody who just got elected. That's going to be so exciting. But they're all in like Congress school. They have like senator school.
Congress
this week.
Camp.
Yeah, Congress camp where they all go and like sing Kumbaya and like do lanyards.
I was curious about that. I think this was something I was very curious because like Emily's List exists to help women get elected. But then you have so many first-time people coming in. Mm-hmm. And so what is the, do you know more about this school? Because we had talked about that a little bit with Gailey, or with Alyssa.
Yeah.
You know, like once you get into Congress, if you're a freshman, it's like you're talking about how Nancy Pelosi is like a really mastermind politician at caucusing and whatever. But that stuff comes with experience. Like, I would imagine that navigating the waters of Congress in year one would be a challenge with a high learning curve. How do you bridge the gap for new people coming in?
I have heard that there's a woman in DC who does like Congress camp basically, and all
what?
first years.
Did she teach you how to like shop at Ann Taylor?
How to pick the proper mock neck?
Yeah, here are acceptable jewel tones to wear when you go on MSNBC for a hit in the rotunda.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of that, and this is from a friend of mine who was a congressional page who said that there's one woman who's like very militant who's been getting the job done for like 20 years, and she says that like you know you get everybody who's a first year together in this space, and some people like the smart ones pick it up really quickly, and then the dumb ones don't, and then good luck. Like I don't know what happens after that. I feel like there is that kind of primer and that's great, but like what happens if you're a second year and you still don't have the ropes?
I don't know, but I think we need to write this pilot, ladies.
I think so.
Congress school. Well, you know, the kind of sweeping victory of Democratic women specifically, and women of color, and women who are achieving firsts in the elections on November 6th. It was, you know, big in different, in most states, it was pretty big, not Ohio, but, you know, Maine, New Mexico, other places.
Yeah.
It was big on the federal level. And of course, in response to that, the president of the United States has thrown a fit and lashed out, which is his standard response. It's interesting whenever he's like upset, he tends to yell at people belonging to a specific demographic. And, you know, tell me if I'm, you know.
I believe that's called scapegoating.
Yeah, it seems like. He tends to, whenever things are going poorly for him, he attacks women of color, specifically black women, specifically powerful and accomplished black women who are trying to do their jobs. Last week, it was Yamiche Alcindor of PBS, April Ryan of the Urban Radio Network, I believe, and Abby Phillip with the Washington Post. he kind of like rapid fire attacked them. I couldn't believe after, you know, April Ryan wrote an op-ed for The Washington Post about how, you know, like, duh, he's attacking black women and he does it all the time. And he makes it clear what he thinks about us. She wrote this really great op-ed for The Washington Post, which we'll put in the show notes if you want to read it. It really kind of spells everything out. But by the time she'd written that, it was only like 3 days after the election. And it felt like there had been 3 weeks of presidential tantrums, and they were all directed at like journalists and like women of color. And it was just like, I don't know. What do you make of his predictable yet still upsetting response to being frustrated or angry?
I mean, predictable and yet still upsetting is dead on. I don't think that there's it's tough not to get cynical about this stuff. Like, of course he's gonna react like that. It's a little comical to see how just like tantrumy he was right after the election. It's just like a clear correlation between what happened and between his mood. Clear correlation. I don't know. I just like when you're dealing with somebody who doesn't have a sort of clear train of thought or any semblance of stability, I don't know what the solution is. Like, you know, except obviously obvious outrage, obviously talking against it and calling it out, especially on behalf of women. We don't have to be the ones attacked for us to see that this is happening, in other words.
Yeah, I mean, this to me, it was sort of like it's like when you watch a three-year-old throw a fit in a supermarket and you're just like, you got to let him tire himself out. But at the same time, I thought that this was like, okay, so this is something that he thinks should work because it worked for him during his presidential campaign, attacking the right people. The right people in the eyes of his voting base works. It works when he is in front of a group of people because they cheer for him. It works when it's him like stirring up his base or getting tweets and retweets. He feels like if he yells at people that look like how his base wants them to look, you know, like if he yells at the right people, then he will like kind of shore up his own support. But I think what happened on November 6th proves that he is running out of white men. Like, there are not enough white men to support a person who – there's not enough racist white men who – to keep his presidency something that has any sort of public mandate. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what he tried to do. Like, the same mechanisms that he – the same levers he's trying to pull here, which is, like, racism, fear, and a kind of patriarchal belief in this old hierarchy – those things didn't work. He tried to do that when he was appealing to the caravan thing right before the election, where it's like, oh, these people from another country are coming in, get scared and vote for Republicans. Mm-hmm. Now he's like, oh, these black women are asking me questions that hold me to account for what I'm doing, get scared and keep me in power. I don't think that's going to work anymore. I don't know. I feel like I'm rambling, but I feel like these things are connected.
No, I hear you on that. I mean, I think that you're absolutely right. He's running out of white men. Obviously, there's been criticism about the number of white women out there who are also supporting him, you know, and the question is is that demographic able to keep him afloat, I think is, you know, is really tenable. It's just infuriating. We just keep going around in circles because what do you do at this point? What do you do? I don't know. We have a House majority now, so maybe that'll change things. Mm-hmm. We can't impeach him, but also what if we can? Maybe that's, you know, something has to give with this, and I don't want it to be our own cynicism because another thing that I think we're seeing is a byproduct of this. There's a study that just came out that hate crimes increased by 17% in the last year. That's not unrelated to this, you know? Mm-hmm. The kind of angst that you see coming from our president has very direct ramifications in the way that we are all treating each other and the way that we are all interacting. And that's where the rhetoric, while it can be something that we sort of, you know, shrug off or attribute to him exclusively and say, okay, well, that's just him, but the rest of us aren't thinking that. That's not true. That really is a top-down. Mm-hmm. We're seeing the top-down effects of that. And that's where I get really angry about this because I think that we are seeing we're seeing a very direct correlation between that kind of rhetoric and action.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I think it's a difficult position for once you are an incumbent, like attacking from the outside is, you know, this guy did all these things wrong. Here's how this person's stupid, etc. But once you're sitting in as an incumbent and you fucked up a bunch, do you know what I mean? Like he's fucked up a bunch in very public ways, like siding with Russia, you know, things that even a lot of Republicans would be like, hey, this isn't like how we do business internationally. These aren't our allies, like these very kind of like baseline rules for presidents so that, you know, even friends of mine who are Republican, like feel very ashamed of this particular president. And then, yeah, it's I would say that that there's always, there's, it's just, in terms of the POC woman thing, it seems like a little bit of like it's like a hater syndrome. Do you know what I mean? It's like just a, it's if you are different at all, there's a little bit of like a, how dare you? Like, how dare you? Yeah, Stacey Abrams is, I mean, brilliant. Like, she's like not only like an incredible speaker with incredibly progressive ideas, but I mean, these are people who've been to the top schools in the country. Like, I mean, they're really like impressive, credentialed, you know, like incredible human beings. But it's like, it's not just that it's reductionist. I think that it's, you will know when we've achieved equality when it's like, when you're in a system that, that doesn't and isn't able to marginalize people in the same way or attack, because there's enough of them that it's like, that it's the norm, that it's business as usual, as opposed to like, oh, I can point you out because you're a little bit different than what the norm of what I'm seeing is.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that if you take a look at the freshman class of congressmen coming in from the Democratic Party, they are younger and more diverse and more female than any freshman class ever. And, you know, if Trump's going to have a lot more people of color to yell at now. And you know what I mean? And but they're going to be there to, like, be like, what are you doing? Like, he's not going to have just, you know, a few members of the press corps that are people of color, where it should be more diverse than it is. But
and like, realistically, that's not going to stop him from hating, and that's not going to stop him from speaking loudly. But it does add more voices to the chorus of resistance. And that's what I like a lot about that statistic, is that it's not like, you know, it's not pie in the sky. This is going to change him. Because it's not going to, but it is going to change the response, and it's going to make those voices louder.
What I do think is fascinating, like Emily's list, like the idea that like where you put your money is where your future is. Like it's interesting to me to see articles coming out now, which are like, women are the future of the Democratic Party. And I was like, well, like there's actually, but there was a fund that was created to actually, just like the Federalist Society, which has been very successful about getting judges like Kavanaugh onto the bench. Do you know what I mean? Where you put your money, that's where the future is. Because if you invest for a long period of time in a thing, like that thing will reap benefits. And like Emily's list means that somebody like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez can like functionally and capably like run a campaign where you have to raise $1 million or more, you know, like, whereas like a normal citizen's going to be like, how the fuck do I start? How would I even do that? So you're giving resources. I'm always really fascinated by that relationship with money, because like Oakland, Oakland is like one of the places where, oh, there's a filmmaker renaissance coming out of Oakland. And it's like, San Francisco is one of the best places, like they invest so much in independent film and has like the best grant system in the country. And then they're like, oh, there's like all these geniuses out of Oakland. I was like, no, there's all these supported, there's all these, there's a lot of supported talent coming out of like that area, which is why you're seeing good products from those people.
Like, why does so much good music come from Canada? Because they subsidize musicians in Canada.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Why? And I think that that's a really good point. Like, money follows money too. So like, now that we have like, or money follows success.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And now that women have shown that they can succeed in larger numbers than they ever have before, and I think progress has been slower than a lot of people would have hoped, but this is really encouraging for the future of where money is going to go, which is really exciting. And really great. And I think we've got a lot of presidential tantrums to look forward to between now and 2020. which makes me kind of want to lie down on the floor and not
Thanksgiving's
move.
Coming up.
And not
so
move, I know.
Have an excuse to do that.
I know. But I think we have to take a break now. And when we come back, we're going to dive into a post-election personal political that has nothing to do with politics, which I'm so excited about. More hysteria when we come back. And we're back with personal political. Ladies, I'm so excited that this time it's not like directly related to a political issue, even though I love politics, like hook it up to my veins, you know, but it's so nice to be able to talk about like some normal everyday shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. I mean, normal everyday shit that is a pain in the ass, but it's great. So I saw a story recently that got under a lot of people's got stuck in a lot of people's craws. Is that the correct expression?
That's correct. We have craws and things get stuck in them.
Got stuck in my craw. It sounds like a 19...
Fiddle-dee-dee.
Fiddle-dee-dee.
It sounds like some 1930s, like, God, yeah, I got stuck in my craw. Well, whatever. Anyway. I've got a good 1930s newsroom accent. That
oh,
I can
do you
break.
Really now?
I've got a good... Listen to me. Okay. So during the New York City Marathon, a man proposed to his girlfriend who was running the race. It was her first time running the marathon. She'd been preparing for over a year. She had 10 miles to go, and her boyfriend proposed to her on the course. Uh-huh. He, like, went on to the course, got down on one knee, did the proposal, and then she went on to finish the marathon. Now, the response to this online was mostly, what the fuck? This woman had been preparing for over a year. She's not even halfway through the marathon, uh-huh. and he stopped her to make it sort of about him. But on the other hand, she seemed pretty happy about it. So uh-huh. I don't know what your thoughts were about this, because it seems like something that a lot of people have opinions on.
I think that they found love in a very helpless place, America in 2018. And I don't know. She liked the proposal. And I think it was sweet. I think it was like logistically weird to stop 10 miles in. Why not just
10
wait
miles
till the
to
end?
Go? 10, 10 miles to go.
Oh, she has 10 miles, miles to go. Oh, God. No.
Changes everything.
No. Okay. Okay. See, I misread this.
You're a marathon runner,
okay.
So this I'm curious about.
Okay, so here's how just the mental journey. I've run three. The mental journey of it has been like you run the first like seven, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I'm 7 miles in. This is great. This is super easy. And then you get to about the halfway point, and you're like, oh my God, I'm at the halfway point. This is great. I'm doing great. And then around mile like 14, 15, you're like, fuck, I've got 11 miles left. 16, 17, 18 are the worst points in the marathon, or they have been for me, because at mile 16, you've run 16 miles and you've 10 miles left. And it's just horrible.
Right.
It is a horrible place to be mentally. You have to like really barge through it. A lot of people hit what's called the wall at like mile 17, mm-hmm. and people just are like, I can't. But you start seeing dropout tents at the like aid station. So there's like big long tables where they hand you Gatorade and water or whatever. And then around like mile 16 or so, they'll have a tent that's like, you can drop out. There'll be a sign that's like, hey, you can drop out if you want to. And you're running and you're like, God damn, and your bones hurt. And you're like, you feel like your sports bra digging into the skin like underneath your armpits. And you're just like,
your
God,
bones hurt.
First of all, that voice kind of sounded like Herbert the Pervert. Hey, you can drop out if
hey,
you want to.
You can drop out right over here. So that's just 10 miles in, you're still on a high. You're still like, I'm
sure.
doing great.
Mm-hmm.
10 miles to go is a horrible place to stop.
Do you think that maybe this was intentional? Maybe this this woman had been talking about how that 10-mile point is where she wants to die and end it.
I was just thinking that, too. I was like, oh, if that's the mile point that I was like, maybe it's not so bad. Then maybe he was like, oh, this is the point when you hit the wall.
Yeah.
I'll give her a boost.
Exactly.
It could have been that could have been the thinking. Before,
love equals endorphins, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
I also think about the other people who are running. Like if that were happening around me, running a big race, regardless of the length of it, is mm-hmm. is a really community heavy experience.
Right.
Like people help each other out. And like if you see somebody walking, you see strangers being like, you can do it, keep going. And it's like really positive and good. And because everybody's just high off their asses on endorphins and pain.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, if there's a distraction, like sometimes people run races in like outfits. And that bothers me because it's like, I mean, whatever. Sometimes they run in like tutus or whatever. But sometimes people, there was a guy dressed like the Eiffel Tower one year that I ran the Chicago Marathon.
What was that material made out of?
I don't know. It was made out of my red hot hatred by the end of it.
Because I'm delighted by this man.
Kieran loves it.
There's a man who like juggles and runs the marathon. It's just like, ugh. I think any distraction that like isn't about running is sort of like
you're very purist.
Annoying.
This is the most hard line I've heard you about anything. How dare you run with a costume? How dare you juggle while you run? I'm like, I think it sounds kind of fun. as a pure spectator who has no interest in running a marathon, this story didn't speak to me because I am not that interested in being proposed to or in running a marathon.
Oh, interesting.
So I have like so little interest in both of these things.
The Venn diagram.
It's like the Venn diagram of I don't give a shit.
Well, I think the thing that like struck me was that A, the public proposal is such a trope, like a cultural trope. People do it all the time.
Sure.
And also along with the public proposal comes people weighing in on how other people need to be conducting their romantic lives.
Yeah.
And then the third part of that is like the proposal, because of the way that it's constructed, is like it's a man like drawing attention to the woman in public in a way that's like totally his decision. And it kind of feels like a little bit, unless it's like well executed, it's a little bit of an imposition on the woman's life. I don't know. Like, I think the public proposal is a trope that a lot of people encounter and see. And that's, it's like how much right do men feel like they have to women's like time and space in public? And I think it's maybe that's a bigger question that I have.
I think that I hear that side. I also think that, like, I don't know. I love seeing love. I love seeing love. I might be the opposite of Kieran. I like
she's like, I love marathons and I love proposals.
Marathons are, I have never run one. I do not have the stamina for it whatsoever. But the idea of like a public proposal, I don't have an issue. I don't know. I don't have an issue with, like, as far as it taking up women's time, it's really about both of them. I mean, I think that that's sweet. I think it's sweet. Maybe that's really ignorant of me, but I think this is sweet. I think, like, logistically, I don't know how you dive into the middle of a marathon with 10 miles to go and make it happen there. It doesn't seem particularly romantic, but it does seem pure to her and something that she was passionate about. And I don't know. She cried and laughed and love said yes, so it feels like it went well. I wouldn't overthink it. In other words, I think that I see the argument of the greater ramifications of men taking up women's space, but I think this is really about him taking space for both of them, you know?
Okay.
And maybe that's more of an issue that, like, as you mentioned, the marathon is really for runners doing a runner's sort of, you know, it's the running community that he imposed himself on, mm-hmm. more so than him imposing himself on something that she did solo without anybody else involved.
Yeah. I guess, like, it's sort of... sort of made me think about like stadium proposals and like how people will propose on like the Jumbotron. And like, or like the Kiss Cam and how all of a sudden it's like, have you ever been on a Kiss Cam?
Never.
Never been on a Kiss Cam? Have you ever been on a Kiss Cam?
I'm not
cam?
Sure I've been to a game where a Kiss Cam happens.
Karen, what do you do?
I do a
she
lot
buys
of...
She underwear at CVS, Aaron.
Yeah. I do a lot of lying in my bed.
Or like the Oscars. I have been thinking about... Who was it who won an Oscar? Oscar.
I love Oscar.
Who won an Oscar and
he's
proposed
Mexican.
To his wife.
Do you know that? That the statue of full of random facts.
Raton.
Oh, maybe I don't have opinions on marathons, but yeah, the statue.
I know that.
The statue of the Oscar is based on the mold of a Mexican man.
I didn't know.
So
that's wonderful.
I always was like, there's no diversity at the Oscar except the statue everyone's holding,
except
that body.
Himself.
Yeah, Oscar himself, the mold of the man himself.
Well, there was a proposal at the.
Yeah. I forget what the category was, but a guy won and
oh yeah, 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 yeah. That's
and
correct.
I thought it was sweet. I don't know. Like, here's the thing. I get annoyed when there are like the Kiss Cam or stadium style. Proposals are eye-rolly to me because we've seen it a million times.
Yeah.
So that's where I get annoyed. It's like, if you're not going to put some creativity into this, then whatever. You're marrying a parody.
Yeah.
But I think that this marathon thing is kind of cute. I don't know.
Well, I think I have an opinion on the Kiss Cam. It is. I think it's...
Have you been on it before?
Yes, I have.
Really? With a gentleman?
With a gentleman who I should not have been kissing. Because he was my brother.
What?
So we did not make out.
Yeah.
So
we, I like where this story is going.
I've talked about this before, but so
with my brother. And we need to take a commercial break. But when we come back, let's hear about Aaron's experience with incest in public.
Game of Hysteria, starring me, the incest lady. No, so my brother and sister and I were both sitting at a Twins Pirates game in the old Metrodome. And this was before it was Target Field. All the Minnesota people will know what I'm talking about. So we were at the Metrodome watching the Twins play the Pirates. And I was home. It was like a month before my brother's wedding. And it was the last time our whole family was together before, you know, the big wedding festivities. And my brother, sister, and I were sitting all three in a row. And my brother that summer, I believe, had an internship or had an internship the summer before at a minor league team. And I asked him how the kiss cam worked. And he was like, well, during play, the people operating the cameras will like kind of look around and they will look for people that are making a lot of gestures toward each other. Like if it seems like there's a couple, and then they'll kind of like program their camera to remember where that was. So they're not just like zooming around willy-nilly during during the breaks. Mm-hmm. They program it for these people that they assume. And so Mike, my brother, was sitting there going like making gestures at me. He's like, so, you know, if you see someone going like this and you're the cameraman, you're going to assume blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know that's how it worked. And he was like, yeah, that's just how it works in the minor league place where I am. And so, you know, sure enough, the next break in the action, the kiss cam comes up and there's like
that's like a prophecy.
I know
that he's explaining it to you and then it comes to you and it's like, well,
and
you
so,
manifested the kiss cam.
I know.
He did.
It was funny because it was like, yeah, OK, but that is interesting because like, why would you assume based on gestures that people want to make out with each other? Maybe they're just Italian, you know? So anyway, the thing comes up and like it takes me a split second to realize that's me because you don't look at a jumbotron expecting to see yourself.
Of course.
And I always had a vision of like what kind of stupid thing I would do if I got on the kiss cam, because I'd never, even if it was next to somebody that I wanted to kiss, I would not do it for a kiss cam. Like that's not my style. And I had this idea like I would do something funny. You know, like I would do like a little jig or something like that.
I would take off my pants and take a shit right there.
That's Karen style.
That was my alt.
That was your alt. That was your alt.
That was my alt.
It's just like really.
Yeah.
Well, you don't. I mean, but it is sudden. It's sudden.
Yeah.
So it's like you don't get the. When a moment happens to you, maybe that's what you mean with the proposal, too. It's a moment happening to you. So it can take.
It takes a second.
It's a moment imposed on you.
It can take a moment.
Well, so anyway, it comes up. I realize it's me. And I, instead of doing anything cool, I put my head in my hands and I put my face down like on
my... Oh, you retreat.
Yeah, I just went like...
You turtle it.
My flight reflex took over.
Yeah.
And my brother and my sister high-fived over my back. So that was my experience on the kiss cam.
That's kind of cute.
Literally pulling yourself into your tiny shell.
I know.
I am a little disappointed that you didn't make out with your brother. I really thought that's where it was going.
I was really hoping for that. But
no, but I just, right. I don't know. I mean,
there's
I know.
There's still time. There's still time, Aaron.
To make out with my brother?
Yeah.
No.
On a kiss cam.
We could just get a handy cam in the studio
here.
And we could fly out your brother. I mean,
I'm
you
extremely
know,
fine with
make
that.
Make a viral video for the internet.
I'm so uncomfortable.
The audience of Hysteria is demanding this, Aaron. It's not us. We're just.
I love the way it's like your face of discomfort is what's egging us on to continue down this disturbing line.
Have Aaron, ever... brother kisser Ryan.
Oh my God. Grace, I'm saying this in all sincerity, but I will kill you. Have you ever had anything happen in public where a man or like there's been a situation where like a man has done something that he thought was romantic, but it was like actually kind of embarrassing?
One time in India, I was walking down a street waving to a little girl because I worked at this orphanage. It's like this whatever, this village where they're with these children. And this guy on the bicycle grabbed my boob as I was walking by. It was like a ride-by boob grab. I was very upset about that.
Oh.
Very small man, like very thin. And then he kept riding.
Should have kicked his ass.
Yeah, but it was so sudden. It wasn't. I mean, I don't think I answered your question correctly.
that wasn't romantic.
No. It was kind of, that was an assault. But like, but it was like, it felt like he felt like he punched my boob. And I was so pissed.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I couldn't react fast enough to like I wanted to like chase after him and like push him off the bike and like kick him, mm-hmm. you know, because it was like, oh, he just like wouldn't be expecting it. It's like such a anyway, that was terrible.
I actually am remembering a teacher of mine in high school who I never liked. He was one of those teachers. He taught AP English. Everybody, yes, I took AP classes.
We didn't have them at my school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was rural. So
rural. he was like beloved by everybody. I went to an all-girl high school, and beloved by everybody. And by the time you got to be a senior, like you wanted this teacher.
He was the Beto O'Rourke of.
For sure. And I was just like expecting
of
this
your
godlike teacher to be this most amazing, like just the most amazing mentor. And day one, I'm like, I don't buy it. It's just there's a facade here. I'm not into it. And this was confirmed a couple months later when I forget what he was explaining. Let's say something,
something
the Odyssey.
About English.
Something about English. And he, to explain his point, jumped on a desk. It was not mine, but it was the desk of a student. We had like a kind of like we're all sitting in a circle, and it was just so aggressive. And it was in that moment that I was like, oh, this is just a performance for you. Like you love all these teenage girls loving you and being all about you, not in a sexual way, not in like a flirty way, but he was like in order to control attention. He did that. It was literally like Tom Cruise jumping on the sofa on Oprah. You guys remember that mm-hmm. like iconic moment where we were like, this guy is off his rockers. It was that a few years in advance. And I just remember being like, this is like you're imposing your physical self on somebody in a way, again, not sexual, not romantic by any means, but in a way to just get attention in that. And that like very specific. I just again, not like I that has stuck with me as a moment of being like men just. If they need attention, they will do what they take. They will take that time and they will do whatever it takes to make it happen.
What is amazing to me about this conversation is that Aaron's question was, has anyone you've been with ever done anything that was an untoward romantic gesture? I told a story about assault in India and you talked about your high school teacher who jumped on a desk.
I feel like this is really revealing a lot about both of you.
Yeah. Okay, the only example I can really think of, I think that it's the people that I date would probably know that that's not like I'm not gonna be a person that you're gonna don't do some bullshit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
This is probably a bigger thing. But I remember one time being in wine country with an ex, and I remember he kind of like had given me his sweater or something because it was cold, and there were two girls walking behind us, and goes. She goes, oh, I want someone to give their sweater to me. And I just wanted to turn around and be like, take this guy and take this sweater. You could just have these ones. It's fine.
Wow, it's amazing that didn't work out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. Just take this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's like, I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe because it was a marathon thing and because it was like, oh, I am entitled to your time and your attention. It just sort of reminded me of like this, I don't know, the mechanisms behind like catcalling and people being like, oh, woman in public. Hey,
the only difference is this is a consensual relationship
totally.
That this woman has like chosen to be in. And mm-hmm. I mean, it might be indicative of what their relationship is, but we don't know. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Of like, it, you know. Like, is this a man who is co-opting attention from a moment of her glory? Was this a man who is like, you know, knew that it was like, this is the moment when you hit a wall and thought it might be sweet? Mm-hmm. Is this someone who's doing it like not meaning to? Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. and what is the negotiation in your relationship? And this is a question, I think we've just talked about this, Grace, offline, but it's mm-hmm. like the idea of like, there's a negotiation in any relationship that you have between what the roles are that each person is playing and mm-hmm. like, we're all in a society, and how you negotiate those things, it's so deeply personal mm-hmm. that I can understand why it's challenging to judge it from the outside.
Right. Yeah. But I think it's also there's also the point to be made that it's like, well, if you did it in public, what did you expect? Like, did you expect, do you want, if you don't want the public to weigh in on what your romantic private life is, then don't do a thing in public.
That's
right.
Fair.
That's fair.
And
that's true.
Think that's what this invited public attention.
Yeah.
He could have just, jumped
and
out.
And she didn't have a choice in the public attention,
right,
is what
exactly.
you're saying, because it was a proposal.
Right. And if he wanted it to be a private moment between them, the two of them, and not have it be something that other people were like, oh, here are my thoughts on this.
Then
he could have just jumped out of the bushes when she was on a run, scared her half to death. and propose that way. I think that it's sort of one of those things where it's like, if you are a man making a romantic gesture in public, like to a person that you have a private relationship with, like, I guess don't be surprised when people weigh in.
When people weigh in,
it
right.
just seems like the nature of things. Also, don't run marathons. It does make your bones hurt.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I'm ever going to do another one. It just
When's the last time you ran one?
2015.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like, by the end of the, oh God, I've.
And learned. If any crooked listeners are thinking of running a marathon, don't wear an Eiffel Tower outfit or Aaron will hate you.
Aaron will
But
hate
I'll kind of like you more. So just weigh it out in your mind.
I mean, I am wearing a Thundercunt sweatshirt.
Can we talk about this? This is really exciting.
Just very briefly before yes. we take a quick break. A few weeks ago, I don't remember, it could have been 10,000 years ago or could have been yesterday, whatever.
Time is a construct.
Time is
yes.
a construct.
Is inevitable.
For sure.
Yes.
We mentioned the word thundercunt on, or the phrase thundercunt on this podcast.
Yeah.
And a listener sent me a thundercunt sweatshirt.
It's great.
It's wonderful. We're going to put it up somewhere on the webs because
yeah,
it's great.
It's glorious.
I haven't showered today and I look terrible. So we're going to be blurring my face in all the pictures that go up.
There are apps where you can put makeup on your face.
I think, can you put just another person's face,
on
my face?
On your face, yeah.
Okay,
sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thundercunts, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll have what she's having.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, and we're back with more hysteria. We're resurrecting because it's post-election. Post-election, guys.
Post-election.
Post-election.
Yeah.
I mean, we never get to relax ever again because relaxing is what got us in this fucking terrible place that we were in prior to the election. But we can, like, relax, like, 25%.
Okay.
And that relaxation has given us space to resurrect some old segments.
I'm imagining you in your bed sleeping at, like, a 75-degree angle. Like, just hovering above. She's like, don't want to lie all the way down. Stay woke.
Too relaxed.
Well, normally I sleep like a bat. I just hang from the ceiling with my feet kind of in the beams.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, but now I'm just sleeping curled up right in front of my front door with my go bag clutched to my chest.
Oh.
Sometimes I sleep in my go bag.
You would fit in a go bag.
I would fit
what
in
is a go bag?
You don't have a go bag?
Everybody's got a go bag.
Kieran, you need a go bag.
You gotta get a go bag.
I don't know what that is.
It's a bag that
water
contains
filters.
Yeah, it contains things that you need in case of emergency, in case you have to leave real quick.
Batteries, flashlights, floss,
cash, toothbrush,
tampons,
underwear, a couple pairs, water purifier.
Mm-hmm. Where are you going?
Anywhere.
In the event of the apocalypse, Kieran, I'm prepared.
Have you ever read The Stand?
Dude.
All right. You need a go bag.
Dude, yeah. We're going to get you a go bag.
All right. That sounds like a good gift. Sounds like a good.
Yeah.
I did. You know what? Speaking of romance, an ex-boyfriend, I gave him, he was very paranoid and didn't know how to handle himself in disasters. And for Christmas one year, I got him, or for Hanukkah one year, I got him a go bag.
That's wonderful. Did
yeah.
he like it?
He did.
That's great.
He did.
I was once on a show that had a go bag as a wrap gift.
Oh.
So smart, right?
That is great.
It's like a backpack and you're like, oh, this is just a backpack for whatever show. And no, inside just...
Oh, I did. I
survival
have...
tools.
Survival tools.
So in Florida, they have hurricanes. So it's like you stock up on water, but in the house, you know
yeah.
what I mean? So you have, it's kind of like an earthquake survival kit,
mm-hmm.
but it's
yeah.
called a go bag. But where are you going?
Or a bug bag. They
where aren't call. You going, Karen?
Well, it's like if you have to evacuate. But also, I have a
yeah.
friend
oh,
who,
okay, I see.
I have
I
a
see.
Friend who used to work for a government organization that dealt with like disaster response. And she said that, you know, most of the time, when a disaster happens, you should just stay put. And people flee and they shouldn't flee. But anyway, you know, it's fine. Everything's
except
fine.
Except for fires. And then you should probably get.
I was like, I'll probably live because, like, I don't want to. Like, I'd be like, I don't have a bag, whatever. Yeah. And then it's like, ugh.
Karen will outlive all of us and be healthier than all of us as well.
Yeah. Just laying in her bed for hours and hours.
Sleep is very important, guys.
It's very important to you, too. I respect that.
Yeah.
I didn't get very much last night.
We should get into, I know, because you were at, what, a gala?
Yeah, of course.
It's a classic.
I thought that's a surprise.
I was texting you from my bed when you were in that gala.
That's true.
Gala. I thought it was gala.
Gala, I think.
Yeah.
It's whatever you want
it
to be.
It's whatever.
It's a celebration.
Exactly. Celebration with a blowout involved. That's all.
Okay, let's get into I'll Have What She's Having. These are things that we're into, aren't necessarily new, aren't necessarily, you know, I don't know, something that's just an invention or whatever. But these are things that women made that we're excited about and we like. Every fall, it's fall, even though it doesn't feel like we have seasons here, but it is fall. Mm-hmm. And every fall, I like to revisit Patsy Cline's catalog. Just listen, spend an evening cooking and listening to Patsy Cline, and I swear it'll feel restorative.
It's beautiful.
Wonderful. She's got such an incredible voice, and her style of music isn't something that you really hear so much anymore. Nico Case kind of does a cool homage type thing to Patsy Cline, but Patsy Cline is just wonderful, and I love listening to her in the fall.
Specifically in the fall. What do you cook while you're
Well, I have a couple, weirdly, and my
Grace is like, paint me a picture.
My boyfriend,
what are you wearing?
My boyfriend makes fun of me for this, but I make a ton of Mexican food. He's like, ooh, a white girl from Wisconsin cooking a ton of Mexican food. But I love cooking. Like, there's a specific, like, verde, like, salsa that I make and I use as a base for, like, a soup. It's really good. I sometimes cook Italian.
Tortillos?
I have done that. I also do like an enchiladas verde. I love like salsa verde or like green chili based dishes because I spent a summer living in New Mexico when I was like 18.
I think we should have a cook off between Aaron and Grace.
Sounds.
I'll be the arbiter of
sure
whose food is more delicious.
I'm sure you would win. But I cook a lot of Mexican food. I cook a lot of Italian food, even though I'm not Italian. And listen to Patsy Cline and just have a nice quiet night alone with my cat.
I gotta have this salsa verde, man.
I'll bring some. It's really tasty.
Please do. I would love that.
I'll bring some next time.
Do you make this dish also?
I have. Yeah, I have in the past.
Anyway.
I have a friend who cooks dal, and I was like, let's have a dal cook off. He's like, I don't want to have a dal cook off with you. I was like, no, you don't.
Why?
Because you're the master.
Win?
Well, I'd be better than him by a lot. Come on, man. I grew up with dal. Like, my dal will be better than your shitty dal. You're not a chef. You're just making dal in your house in Eagle Rock. Get the fuck out of my life. Of course my dal will be better than your dal.
This is quite a battle rap. I'm here.
This is stupid.
Really, I'm into this.
I love it. Okay, Grace, how about yours?
All right. I'll Have What She's Having is, I don't know that you guys have heard of Boy Brow, right?
Yeah.
The Glossier product. Called Boy Brow. Okay, so this is like the iconic, you gotta have this eyebrow thing that like everybody's been using for years. It's apparently amazing. I had not tried it till very recently. In fact, today, this morning is the very first time that I tried it. But I went on to Glossier's website to like check out the deal. And they have these user reviews. And so my I'll Have What She's Having this week is the most liked positive review because this woman says that she spent a summer as a music therapist in Jamaica, and that Boy Brow is what got her through this experience living in Jamaica, hiking 6 miles in the rainforest, 5 hours of outdoor music therapy sessions with children rubbing all over my face because they were fascinated at my whiteness, application of the product in dirty, dimly lit bathrooms, swimming in the Caribbean, and of course, sweat and tears where you can start to not feel like yourself.
Oh my God.
But there was Boy Brow. I just want everybody to go read it.
I'm having like an out-of-body experience listening to you read this now.
That sounds like Louise. You know Louise Linton? You know
who
she is? That sounds like the book that she wrote about.
Mnuchin's wife.
Yeah, that sounds like the book that she wrote about going to Africa.
This might be.
That was widely debunked as like, this didn't happen. Oh my God. Okay, so our Treasury Secretary's wife, Louise Linton, is an awful woman who is grew up in a Scottish castle and like is just terrible.
It's also an actress.
She was one of her parts was lotion salesman and it was cut from a movie. She's an awful, awful woman.
Yes.
And she before she was like kind of the Marie Antoinette, but like less likable of the Trump administration, which says a lot. She wrote this book about her time in Africa, working in an orphanage in her gap year, working in like an orphanage for children whose HIV positive or whose parents had died and because of AIDS. And she wrote all these like super racist accounts of like her. She's like, they were all trying to touch my hair and they called me an angel. And it's like,
yeah,
Louise,
honey, don't
take all the seats. Oh, my God. But yeah, that sounds like
this is basically her.
Louise Linton write that?
Yeah, Louise Linton, I think, wrote this.
How is that the number one most liked positive review?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's impressive that this product works that well, but also, my goodness.
Well, it can't cure racism, apparently. It can make your brows look great, but it can't make you into a person that isn't fucking tedious.
It sounds super corny, but boy brow was what made me feel like myself every day. That's a direct quote. She seems real happy, so I'll have what she's having.
Oh, my God. Piping hot. Old school racism.
Yeah.
Just like what mom used to make.
Also, by the way, user reviews are wonderful. I don't think we spend enough time. I mean, there's like the Haribo gummy bear thing. I don't know if you guys have heard about that. But
no.
I'll keep it very brief here. But Haribo has these sugar-free gummy bears. And you guys should go to Amazon and check out the reviews. Because basically, it's just an escalation of like, I shat my brains out and my skin melted.
Because of all the sugar-free. The ingredients in sugar-free can really mess with your stomach.
Xylitol or whatever it is. Not xylitol. I don't know what it is, but it's rough. And
I shat my brains out.
And my flesh melted off.
Right.
I shat my brains out. My flesh melted off. And a fetus came out of my nose. Yeah, whatever.
Wow. Yeah. That's great. Mm-hmm. Let's get to Kieran's. I'll have what she's having.
I don't think I can top Grace's. That was pretty magical. This is a book I haven't read, but I saw it on my friend's dining table, and it looked really interesting. And I thought maybe this would be a thing. I was very curious. I saw it on their dining table. I stole it from their dining table. it's called Shout Your Abortion. The foreword's by Lindy West, and it's edited by Amelia Bono and Emily. She has a last name, and she is a person, and I don't have it in front of me. But I thought that was it. I thought that, you know, I like started flipping through it, and I was like, oh, that's like a topic I don't see a lot of personal experiences published about. I was like, oh, this is like this seems like a cool resource to have and probably speaks to a gap in storytelling that we don't hear about because
like
it's
that.
Such a private kind of experience. And I was like, oh, that's really probably a book that could provide a little less alienation and a little bit of a window into what other women are experiencing.
I think especially for women that are experiencing it themselves, especially if they're in communities where it's not something that people just kind of talk about willy-nilly. Like, we're in big coastal cities and, you know, it's you get people like two cocktails deep and be like, so abortion, and people just kind of tell you. But I think especially if you're in a place that's kind of far away from liberal enclaves, it's good to not feel alone in those things.
Yeah.
And that seems like a kind of a way to do that. So
I like it.
Sounds super interesting. Okay. Now I think we just got to move on to hills. So here's the hill I'll die on this week. I think that navigation apps are conspiring against us all to make us late. Here's why.
Yes. Yes.
Because they especially don't seem to take into account where stoplights are.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an example. I take, you know, an Uber when I go out to work. I work in Santa Monica and I live kind of in the middle of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a long commute.
Mm-hmm.
But I take a car to the train and then I take the train. And then when I come back, I do it in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
The car ride home should theoretically be a straight shot up one major artery in the city. But the navigation always tells my driver to go up like this weird street where there's no cross signals and and it's rush hour, and so we end up having to sit there for like 5 minutes waiting for like the traffic to part.
Yeah,
I think it's a conspiracy. I think they want to keep us in the car. That's the hill I'm going to die on this week.
I like that. I think it's true. I also had that exact same thing happen to me yesterday on my way to the gala.
Oh my stars.
I like that. But then what about when it tells you, oh, don't worry, it's 12 minutes, and then you're in it and they're like 17 minutes.
Oh,
22
dude,
minutes.
You know who's been doing that lately? Lyft and Uber, too.
Yeah.
They're
like,
yes,
three
yes.
minutes away, and then 10 minutes later, they just keep saying that.
Yeah.
They lie. They lie.
There's a lot of lies.
There's so many lies. All right, Kieran, got a hill you're going to die on this week?
This is, I don't know how people are going to take this one.
Oh,
it's,
boy.
I think men's feet are categorically ugly. Like, categorically ugly. Like, to the point where, and this is really controversial, like, maybe they shouldn't have feet.
Would you rather they just have flippers?
Yeah. Yeah, or just stumps, you know what I mean? Then they just, like, or just, like, yeah, wheels, anything, you know?
I'm going to counter that with, I've seen some really ugly female feet, too.
Sure.
Why am I looking at women's feet?
No,
no one knows.
Yeah, that's fair, but, like, I'm saying categorically, have I, like, the most I can ever expect from a man's foot is that I'm, like, not totally disgusted, you know? But I just, I was like, the audacity of them just having them out.
It's truly imperialistic.
Know?
It truly is.
I just, I don't like the feet. I don't like the man's foot.
I don't like stepping
it.
On my boyfriend's feet.
What?
He has like kind of squishy feet. I can't explain it.
Yeah.
But I would not want him to have flippers because he has squishy feet and they're like.
So you like his feet?
Yeah, I do.
This has gone in a direction.
I don't like men's feet.
Okay.
I don't like them.
All right.
All right.
I don't like them. I mean, I don't like them.
Okay.
All right. I think
you're fully dead on this hill.
I don't know what it means. It's I really do feel that's one.
You will have people die on that hill with you.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know.
For sure.
I feel pretty alone right now.
My boyfriend's feet are squishy.
I have said nothing about anybody's feet.
That's correct.
I have no foot opinions.
You have no opinions on...
Or you're just being silent about them.
Well, here's some weird things about my feet. I can walk on the knuckles of them.
Oh, that's weird.
It's disgusting.
That's
I'm not going to do it to you guys. I promise.
I don't like it.
Yeah, it's bad. Anyway.
I don't like it.
Grace likes everything.
I don't like that. All right, I got it in my brain. I don't like it.
I don't like your voice dropped like 3 octaves too.
And you already don't have that high of a voice.
Yeah,
it's true.
Okay, what hill are you like going to die on before we wrap this guy up?
I'm going to keep it simple. I'm going to keep it food centric because I think that's what the world demands. Pretzel buns can only be consumed warm. They can and only should be consumed warm. If you've ever had a room temperature or even a little bit cold pretzel bun,
it's too dense.
That's a good point.
Think about it.
It's a pretzel bun.
It's a pretzel bun. So it's like, you know, a sort of dinner roll style, but it's yeasty
and salty.
I love a pretzel bun.
It's like a roll.
It's like a roll, but it's very dense, Kieran. But it has to be consumed warm. You can split it and toast it, and that's wonderful. You can heat the whole thing up in a microwave or an oven. That's wonderful. Here's what you can't do. Serve it at room temperature or a little bit chilly. I had one at the gala last night.
Oh, my God. That fucking gala. Gala, whatever.
Oh, yeah, gala.
I hate it. I don't like it. I'm dying on that hill this week.
Okay, I think that's fair. Next week, listeners, tune in for a special You Guys Heavy edition of Hysteria. We will not be recording it fresh, so if, you know, a meteor hits the world and we don't talk about it, that's because we recorded it, like, right after we recorded this one. And thanks to Kieran and Grace for hanging out with me. I'm Erin Ryan. This was Hysteria.